Good morning. I'm very honored to be here today, and my talk is gonna support a little bit of what Brenda has said. It's gonna support some of what Dr. Herrera has said, so this will be kind of interesting. I'm simply gonna give us a bit of a tour. Primarily, I wanted to look at differences in the geogenic sources of these salts that we have in my world, which is in southern Nevada, in Clark County, Nevada. And kind of contrast in some of the pedogenic process that's involved in moving and transporting these salts within the landscape. And so let's do that. I wanted to go back in time just briefly to kind of give us just a tiny bit of background. And Ron Blakely has produced some beautiful paleo maps that help with this. If we take a look at where we actually are, and we go back into Pliocene, we've already kind of gone through the rock and roll and the Miocene extension, and now we have a much warmer, drier environment. And if we move a little bit forward into the Pleistocene, we can see now that we are into the cyclic wet periods of the Pleistocene, and you can still see our area of interest where we are. And we end up then basically in late Quaternary to present. The cyclic changes in water were probably very, very critical in pulses that were moving some of these salts through the landscape in southern Nevada. The area of interest is in the Mojave. This is just simply a satellite image of Mojave. If we were to add a 50-kilometer buffer to the boundary of what would be the Mojave Desert, we end up with an image that looks like this. Of interest, this is Las Vegas area, the Spring Mountains. This is the Virgin River, Colorado River. So this region is approximately 25,000 square miles, huge difference in elevation from minus 80 meters to 3,600 meters in elevation, huge topography differences. Completely located within the Basin and Ridge Province. This is within the physiographic province, not within the hydrologic province, since we are draining into the Colorado River system. Temperature ranges are just extreme. That's probably an understatement. Rainfall, it goes from probably less than 50 millimeters to an order of magnitude over 500 millimeters within this area. Evapotranspiration is in excess of 2.5 meters. So a little bit of a disparity is noted. And Beatley's comment, I'll comment on here in the next slide. But in spite of this, life abounds in the Mojave Desert. Diversity of species is incredible, and there's just fantastic strategies that both animals and plants have adapted to live in this region. A generalized look at the climate that is the climate of interest for us in taking a look at the pedogenesis of salts within the county. And I'll refer a little bit back down to Beatley. Janice Beatley was a botanist who described the vascular plants of the Nevada test site. And in the front of her book, she had a 9-10 page narrative. And in there, she had one profound statement that I really have enjoyed. And that was that when you're talking about the Mojave Desert, you can't talk about having a drought. You are a drought. And she's right. So in spite of certain water purveyors that will sell us on droughts that are occurring. In fact, it's impossible. We are a drought. And as you can see then, basically we're going bankrupt in soil moisture generally in early March. If we take a look, this is the Clark County area. This is, again, the Colorado River. And just really a general scheme in the temperature regimes that occur within this area is the hyperthermic down along the lower elevations, somewhere around 1,800 feet and below, probably are running hyperthermic. The yellow and greenish color is the thermic, and the green is that transitional zone where we are transitioning from thermic into mesic. mesic, then is this lighter white colored, a little bit of frigid, and if you thought that was little, there's even a littler cryic, only at the very highest peaks that occur within the Mojave. So geogenic source and occurrence of gypsum and more soluble salts, there's just extensive deposits of gypsum that have occurred in primarily Paleozoic deposits in mountain ranges in the Virgin Mountains, the Muddy Mountains, southward to Frenchman, and the Spring Mountains. But in addition to that, we have beds of gypsum, and other salts are very, very common in the upper Permian red beds, Tara Weeping Kaibab Formation, lower and upper portions of the Moenkopi, completely throughout the Chinle, with larger concentrations in the upper part of the Chinle, and in the Horse Springs Formation, and in many parts of the Muddy Creek Formation. As Brenda had alluded to, the source of dust as a source of salts into these systems is, I don't know how to emphasize it enough. There are, in fact, certain areas where we have bedrock substrates. We've had entire soils that have formed, that are deep soils that have formed on these, and they are completely aeolian in source, and they are extremely old with petrocalcites in them. And so the only source of those that they could be is aeolian. So this is a really significant amount. Meredith Reyes has done some studies on the rate of dust recharge within the Mojave region, and this is some of that data. Of interest here is that the playas that emit dust are richer in soluble salts and carbonate than from alluvial sources, except for carbonate-rich alluvial fans. But the dust deposition rates do not reflect this trend. Now, this is important. The salt flux tends to be larger in mountain ranges, and I believe that one of Bob Graham's graduate students has been working in that and has been validating that. So the gypsum flux and the carbonate flux are in parallel in the dust deposition. So this is just a real simple example. This happens to be part of the Chinle Formation, and you can see a nice geogenic bed of gypsum, and then one even below, right along the toe of the stream. So we also have then, not only are salts being concentrated and added to the landscape, in fact, maybe it's even possible that the salts have had a hand in the forming of this landscape and shaping of this landscape. Dr. Andrew Hansen at UNLV in the geoscience department, a stratigrapher, has been working on possible salt tectonics that are occurring within the Muddy Creek Formation. So previous studies have hypothesized that the Muddy Creek Formation is a post-tectonic infill, so Miocene extension of a basin, post-tectonic infill of sediments into this, and this was the Muddy Creek Formation. Well, that may not be the whole story. Results indicate the Muddy Creek Formation is comprised of sand-dominated fluvial red beds with dominantly southward paleoflow, unconformably capped by pebble to boulder conglomerates, and that in fact it's possible that there's diapiric processes with salt that have occurred. This is actually a photograph of a prehistoric mine for salt, and in fact it was mined historically also. But what is of interest is that we are looking at the tip of an iceberg here. This is approximately one-third of a cubic mile of massive halite that occurs within the Muddy Creek Formation. So, you know, this is not like a simple evaporated bed here. If we take a little bit closer look at a portion of this, you can see the nature of this massive halite. It's rather impressive. So kind of in general, to look at the general area that we'll talk about just really briefly, we have the Virgin Mountains. This is the Virgin River. This is the Muddy River, Colorado River, inflow from here, Frenchman, and the Muddy Mountains. This point is going to be of interest. Let's take another look at this. And with the assistance of Sue Beard, Flagstaff, USGS, we have a standard thematic map that she assisted me with, and we stretched iron oxide a little bit to make some of the gypsum show up. So if you see this teal blue color here, and this is the Pabco deposits of gypsum that are commercially being mined right now, you can see that we're starting to see where there's a little bit, we're getting the iron oxides are helping us see where some of this gypsum is at least superficial, where we can see it on the surface. With the result of having finished a cooperative soil survey within Clark County, we now have an ability to kind of take a look at just where this gypsum is occurring. So if we take a look at the gypsum content of the mapping as surficial, let's just take a look at the surface, we end up with a map then of where the gypsum occurs, and this is rather valuable both for use and management for all the agencies within Clark County, and even for any more detailed studies that we might want to pursue. The orange color there actually should be 0 to 1, I, I think my bitmap editor missed that somehow. So at any rate, just a real quick look at some of the landscapes that we're looking at. We have, you can notice some, these are some deposits, Miocene deposits of gypsiferous materials. This is Jurassic sandstone. I'm not going to belabor any of the fluvial systems, which obviously are going to be a major source of concentration and transportation of salts, as Brendan had talked about Las Vegas Wash a little bit. But the same things apply to the Virgin River and to the Muddy River also. These are perennial wet systems within the Mojave Desert and are very important in transport of both the sediment and salt. And here you can actually notice that the substrate or the rock, the structure of the gypsum in this rock is actually showing through. If you notice the little ridges that are kind of showing through here, this is the actual structure of the bedrock. But even with this, there's the water supplying capacity of this landscape is having a huge effect. And it's starting to mobilize and move salt through this system. So even though we're in a world full of this salt, we're also having process involved that is mobilizing, transporting, and concentrating the salt within that landscape. So if we take a look at just two simple examples, one of them is, I think, would fall well within the category of the gypseous soils that have been discussed here today. And we'll take a look at the dry gyp, and then we'll take a look at Underton, which is this wonderful protected old geomorphic surface that now is basically back into carbonate and silicate type movement of salts and sedimentation. So we'll take a look at the dry gyp. Now, this particular photograph doesn't quite illustrate some of the heave that has been observed in dry gyp. We've had areas with almost a meter of heaving arise due to the salts in this particular soil series. It's not, you know, the most productive soil that one might ever want to see. And this is hyperthermic. It's extremely hot out there in the summertime. This is a very difficult place, tough real estate to make a living for these guys. And this is also, when I ran a check on the SC file for the taxonomy for the soils classified within the United States, it turns out that this is just currently, and I'm sure there's probably things on the way and coming, there's only two petrogypsic soils classified in the United States right now, and both of them are in Clark County. This is one of them. To kind of take a look at the amounts of gypsum that we have within this profile, this is work, this is an analysis done at our national laboratory in Lincoln, Nebraska. And so you can see now, this is interesting, the amount of carbonate in the A horizon. And my guess is probably this is an alien influx of carbonate that's in the upper part of the soil. And then you notice that it drops, and we go instantly into a BOI horizon. We're over 90% gypsum. I think this is our gypsiest definition that we're talking about. And so you can see that we're not shy in any of the gypsum, and we do have BYMs where we have a petrogypsic horizon that is within the soil. So the profile of the soil is a little bit uninteresting in that it's just almost pure white. We notice that in the A horizon, localized in the upper part, though, we still are getting carbonate class that are segregated and separate into the carbonate, the gypsum crystals around it. All of the thin sections were done by Rebecca Burt, and I'm very, very grateful to her for her effort. Again, if we take a look at a section that is part of the petrogypsic, notice the density here. And as it turns out, if you take a look in the literature, with a soil that was 89% gypsum, 1.33 grams per cubic centimeter, the data we received back off of this is within line with a 90% gypsum and a 1.36 grams per cubic centimeter bulk density, thus supporting this thought that as the gypsum is increasing, our bulk densities are dropping. Here below in the BYM now, though, we're seeing some organization of the gypsum crystals that actually seem to be orienting and organizing a little bit. I'm going to go through Underton very brief. This is one of the soils that has everything. You know, it has an argillic and it has a calcic, petrocalcic. It's like a fabulous old soil. The Mormon Mesa, maybe 5 million-year-old surface is here. And the Overton surface, 3.8 million years old, is below that. And of course, then we are the Underton under the Overton. And this is somewhat younger than about 3 million years. The A horizon in this is composed of silt and sand carbonates. Again, this is this alien influence. And we show that we're like 20% carbonates in this fraction. Of interest is in the BK1 horizon, we actually have plant fossils that showed up in the carbonate. So here we have these ooids that actually showed up in the carbonate cementation. This is just really kind of exceptional. And we also are showing some silicate lamella cementing too that's occurring in the pan. So that's pretty much the end of the talk. I'll just summarize with a couple of really brief comments. The geologic history and the current climate of Clark County, Southern Nevada have definitely conspired to concentrate these salts in the environment that we have. And with high concentration of salts, the processes involved in translocation, transformation of these soluble salts within soil profiles can be difficult to evaluate. And we're looking at geogenic and pedogenic. This is not always a simple task. And the last comment that I would make is that these systems are definitely complex. I would support Brenda in that. Every time we've ever evaluated something closely, done complete mineralogy on something, we're finding out that they're very complex and there's probably not very real simple solutions to these. And that's it. Thank you.
Segregation of calcium carbonate by gypsum. I found the same thing not in petrogypsum, but in gypsum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process self feeding, iterative of several stages of calcium carbonate segregation.
Where they're segregating, you mean?
Yes, segregating.
Yes, exactly.
Purified gypsum. So I think it's very close to something. Not the same, but the process. Similar,
not
in Spain.
That's good to hear.
Gypsum,
no petroleum.
Right.
Both you and Brandon talked about this salt. And I guess my question is, can gypsum drive that alone, or does there have to be some combination of other salts mixed with gypsum to produce that heating on the landscape? Are those pedogenic?
Yeah, what is pedogenesis? I mean, if we're transforming, that becomes part of this whole question. And one of the things I guess I would address that with, Doug, is this. In the dry gypsum soil, we're just almost just pure gyp. I mean, we just a lot of gypsum in that. And so you would look at that and you would argue, is there any pedogenesis really going on? Are we dissolving? Are we cementing? The heave going on the surface? But there's another series, which I should have shown, and I didn't do it. It has basalt cobbles that have come down and worked into the profile. And those class within this type of material have formed beautiful pendants underneath them, which I believe I sent to a meeting we had on gypsum here a little bit ago. Now, I don't think anybody in this room could argue with pendants forming on the rocks that we're talking about pedogenesis going on. So if the rocks aren't there, do we not have pedogenesis? That's the question.